actually here in Vienna at the World Credit Union Council Conference, World Credit Union Conference, with Ryan Donovan. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Getting a little punchy here in the afternoon hours, but we're surviving.
I know. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 9 o'clock in the morning, depending on that. Or 3 what? O'clock in the morning for you.
I know. I'm like eating dinner and my family's asleep or something like that. It's craziness. But anyway, I digress. We're talking advocacy here on a global scale.
Talk to me about something other than advocacy.
I don't know. I think you have a passion for it, so it's always fun talking to you about it. So, well, I mean, you were on a panel, and the panel was entitled, What Does Advocacy Look Like in a Period of Disruption? And this is obviously a very timely topic. So what does it look like?
Well, it's complicated because, you know, the nature of disruption is that things are changing. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be able to adapt to that change. And mm-hmm. we're seeing it happen globally. So with Brexit, with mm-hmm. the election of President Trump, mm-hmm. with the election of President Macron in France, things are changing. There's a tremendous amount of populism across the globe, and as leaders of an advocacy effort, we need to make sure that we are well situated to deal with that change. Mm-hmm. And I think we are in the United States. We were prepared for the outcome of the election. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that we predicted it, but we certainly were prepared for it. And what we've seen in the first 6 or 7 months of the administration has been very positive for credit unions mm-hmm. and our campaign for common sense regulations. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about on a global scale, though?
Well, on a global scale,
and then how does it affect us? I mean, how does bring it back home?
Sure. And on a global scale, you know, what we saw in the panel yesterday is that the UK credit unions are dealing with some near-term and long-term ramifications of the decision to exit the European Union. And at the European Union level, talking with Michael Edwards and others that work in Brussels and more globally, it's how do you make sure that the folks that are setting international standards are taking into consideration the impact that those standards have on credit unions. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we deal with, that I wouldn't say we struggle with, but certainly that we work on in advocacy in the United States and globally is this notion of relevance. And the more relevant we are, the greater extent that policymakers will take us into consideration. So we need to continue with our awareness. We need to continue to promote our relevance in the public policy sector so that when there is disruption in advocacy, we're well positioned to adapt to it.
It sounds like relevancy is the kind of the foundation here, you know? Relevancy kind of is the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak.
So. Well, and so the great news for particularly for U.S. credit unions is that we're more relevant now than we ever have. Credit unions are healthy, they're growing, and, you know, if that trend in and of itself means that, you know, in theory, regulators ought to be off the backs of credit unions a little bit more. Congress ought to be off the backs of the regulators a little bit more. So that's good. The fact that they're growing does mean that we're more relevant. And, you know, we see that in our membership numbers, where we're now about 110 million memberships in the United States, and in our asset size, which is over $1 trillion now for U.S. credit unions. And that's certainly helpful in our advocacy efforts.
Oh, my gosh, no doubt. The numbers really tell the story. So what other messages were conveyed during the panel? Was there anything else compelling?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that that I tried to emphasize was the reason that U.S. credit unions were prepared for this election outcome was really twofold. The first is that we approach public policy in a bipartisan manner. So if you look certainly in the financial services sector, but also in the broader business industry sector, the Credit Union National Association is one of the most bipartisan organizations. We give appropriately to both parties. That is to say, we're not quite 50-50, but we don't need to be quite 50-50 because that's not exactly how the government is divided these days. And the other takeaway is that the reason that we were able to adapt to this so well was that we've got real people telling our stories, and we're able to leverage that. That's a big part of our membership activation program, this idea that if we educate our credit union members about the issues that are facing credit unions, that we can turn them into advocates. Mm-hmm. We can use them to our advantage, which is going to be absolutely necessary. I mean, if we've learned one lesson from this last election cycle, it's that the groups, the organizations that are able to tap into the populist energy in the country are going to be the ones that are going to be winning. Mm-hmm. And we want to win.
Yeah. Wasn't the last time we talked about having 110 million advocates out there?
That would be awesome. I mean, listen, there is no one more invested in the success of credit unions than credit union members.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know,
they're there for a reason.
They're there for a reason. And I go around and I talk about this in the notion of groups like the National Rifle Association and AARP, and folks will come up to me afterwards and say, well, you know, that's not exactly right, because gun owners, they really love their guns, and you know, and old people, they're really attached to their insurance, and it's just not the same with credit union members. And I say, why not?
Yeah.
I said, credit union members are putting their life savings in the hands of our volunteer boards of directors and the executives and the staff that run the credit unions. They're trusting us to be good stewards of their finances, to be there when they need loans to help them afford life.
Mm-hmm.
They're really invested in our success. They've got a stake in what we're doing.
It's the money that will help them buy that gun. It's the money that will help them buy that insurance, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's what's...
No,
it's a weird example,
I think the broader point is that, you know, there is an opportunity to engage credit unions, and there's a responsibility on our part as leaders of the movement to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key thing. That's the key way that we're able to navigate this disruption or any future change in the political scheme.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of disruption these days, not only in the political, but technology, security. It's
so,
everywhere.
Mike, interesting that you mentioned this, because when we talked about this panel, when I talked about it with Brian several months ago and we were putting it together, we were thinking very narrowly in terms of political disruption, but you're absolutely right. There are so many other ways that the financial services sector is being disrupted. You've got the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency in Washington considering a fintech charter. And you know, certainly if you talk to credit unions around this conference, they'll tell you about the disruption that they're seeing in terms of new market entrants that are competing for their members,
mm-hmm.
that are bringing to market services that are similar or maybe more innovative, that are faster. And there's a real question about how can credit unions, how can small financial institutions compete in that environment? And so an important part of what we're trying to do in advocacy is to make sure that the federal credit union charter in the United States mm-hmm. is modernized, is something that's adaptable, that allows credit unions to evolve. Listen, it's not 1934 anymore.
Nope.
It's not even 1998.
Nope.
The best takeaway that I've had from this conference so far, other than your brilliant emceeing on stage.
Please.
There's lessons to be learned there, Mike, for all of us.
Me included.
The speaker yesterday talked about how you always have a tendency to overestimate the potential for change in a two-year period, but you underestimate the potential for change over 10 years. And, you know, if you think about where we were 10 years ago, I'm not sure that any of us would have predicted where we are today. And so when we think about those disruptors that are coming from today, the fintech world, it may be something completely different in 10 years. In any case, we've got to make sure that that credit union charter is able to adapt and evolve to meet those challenges.
Yes. Is there anything else that you want to take back to CUNA or from this? I mean, obviously, that's a big one.
So, you know, this conference is really an important venue for everyone here, and you always, you know, I come to speak and to be a part of the educational sessions, but I'm always taking back something. I'm learning from my colleagues that do similar jobs in other countries. I'm learning from credit unions in other parts of the world. I was just in Ukraine about 6 weeks ago, helping them as they work with their government on tax issues, on small business lending, on relevance and awareness, all things that we're dealing with in the United States, and the ability to listen to them and their concerns and to understand that, you often get a fresh eye perspective on what you're working on in the United States.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, is like, what Do you learn anything about advocacy here that you can take back to the States? Because there's, I'm sure there's always got to be something.
So the example that I always point to in this question is actually from the Canadian system. I went up for their, they have a hike the hill, Parliament Hill in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. I went up there, I think it was 2013, so about 4 years ago, and I participated in their hike the hill program. And what we took away from that was we redid our briefing documents. It's a really nuanced thing, but we have these issue papers that we give to lawmakers and staff to help explain our issues. And the approach that the Canadians used at that time was very innovative. It was different than what we were doing. Mm-hmm. It gave us a tremendous opportunity for a fresh start in that. Mm-hmm. And it's a really small example, but I think it's one that we certainly used it to our benefit, and it's a type of exchange that I think is representative of what goes on in a conference like this.
Very cool. Anything else to add to wrap up, Mr. Donovan?
Just thanks for the opportunity, and it's always good to see you.
Good to see you well, even though it's on the other side of the planet. It's always good to see
you. Sometimes we have to go to the other side of the planet to see each other.
Exactly.